appears to this minister that we have never been more needed on this planet as we see so much change going on all around us. And so last week I spoke about relevance. Last week we looked at, it was our annual meeting. I can't believe how fast things move around here. But we looked at that idea of relevance as for us as a community and relevance for us individually. And so we're going to sort of move ahead with all of that. And what I know is for this community, because I ask every year, I ask, you know, so what matters to us? And we take little tallies and we do polls in different ways to try and stay relevant and current to what we as a community believe and are willing to stand for. And what's beautiful about that is, you know, spiritual community is always changing. People are always coming and going, and visitors stop by, and we maybe bring family members with us. So every week we are a completely new configuration of souls. And yet through the years that I have been here and preceding my time as the senior minister here, we have this one solid theme, and that is that we honor all paths to God, that our founder, Ernest Holmes, saw truth in every religion, every spiritual tradition, and that seems to be one of the most relevant and exciting ideas for us as a community to continue to call forth and state in the way that we show up. So one of the beautiful aspects of that is that I don't know that that's an easy task, to accept people where they are and to honor all paths to God. We sort of weave in and out of agreement with that based on what's happening in the world, what's happening in our lives, how strongly we might feel about one thing or another at any given time. But what's so beautiful for me is that we, as a community, strive to stand in that truth, to really be that gorgeous, safe place of accepting and honoring people and our differences, because we are all really different. Have you noticed? We really all show up in different, even when we're trying to fit in, there are certain ways that we just show up uniquely to who we are. And that is, you might say, divinely intended, because we are individualized expressions of spirit itself. So this idea of diversity and inclusivity is valuable when we're looking at the idea of growth, when we're talking about the law of growth, because one thing we know about life is that it is always changing, and we are always changing, and our circumstances are always changing. But we do take a strong stand in believing that life is forever and ever expanding. And you can sort of see that if you just look historically at how life has changed. You know, before they had airplanes, you know, now we fly, we have a whole different consciousness about traveling about this world because we have made that accessible. Before we understood some of the basic workings of the universe. And now we have more information, but always life seems to be showing us, even if you just watch nature, that there's this insistence, there's this ever-evolving, ever-expanding continuance of life itself. Life is always advancing itself, but life is also always advancing us. And where we get into trouble is when we resist that. So I want to talk about some of those ideas this morning, because one of the basic bottom line truths of life is that, you know, nothing is here forever. You know, if you own your home and if you've lived in your home for a while, you realize it needs upkeep. You know, and now I never had an HOA until I moved to Arizona. Now it seems like it's hard to dodge having an HOA, but they're very good about letting you know when your house needs to be painted or if your gravel in your front yard has diminished and you need to augment that, you need to supplement it, you know. So we know that life changes, and we know that everything ages and decays But that happens as a process that is always for the highest good of the greater life, so that there is that beautiful continuance. We always say one door closes, another door opens, and everything, including our experiences, our circumstances, the situations we live through, our relationships, everything is always sort of being rebirthed as necessary. So I thought about it this way. I love to just gaze at the beauty of a flower in bloom, even some of the weeds that we see. Although I did hear once that every flower is a weed somewhere else, you know, that everything, you know, depends on where you live. But if you look at every petal on a flower, you can realize, as you look at the beauty of it, touch it, smell it, examine it, that it's only here for a while. You know, that the flower blooms for different reasons, but some flowers have to bloom so that the seeds can be released, you know, and that everything in nature plays a part in that, from the birds and the insects to the wind. So there's that gorgeous cycle of life, and we know if we just look at the trees, the leaves on a tree, they come and they go. And so for everything, there is a season. Now, on this idea that there are different seasons of life, Hugh and I were watching the, he's not here. Well, let's get him when he comes in. Shall we? So I have a vote. Should I pick on him or not? Oh, yeah? Okay. All right. I hope he's not back there. Hugh and I were watching a nature channel. Oh my gosh, I don't know which channel, but somebody has reproduced a new series of Planet Earth. I think they're calling it Planet Earth 2. If you get an opportunity to see any of them, oh, you should. They're so good. I'm just having such a fun time with that. Beautifully done, better than the last season. And there we saw on Thursday or Friday a segment about the cicadas. You know about the cicadas? So, the cicada is a locust. It's in the locust family, and those are the noisy bugs that get in the trees and they sing, you know. So when I lived in Arkansas, the cicadas had a very southern accent in Arkansas, as it turns out. So they would get together and sing in the summertime. Just before dark, they'd get really loud, and they had a rhythm in the way they sang together. They kind of like that. Yeah, get it? But I notice here, I don't know if we have cicadas or they're just some other kind of locust, but we got something that climbs the trees and sings. But it sings in an even, everybody sings the same note. It just gets louder and louder and louder. And oh, they're so fun to hear. They just excite me. You know, they're seasonal and we get all that. But the true cicada only lives a short while, maybe only a month of its whole life out there singing. It lives a full year before it comes out of the earth. So the females come out once a year, and they lay their eggs, and then the eggs turn into little nymphs that fall out of the branches and the twigs of where the eggs have been laid, and then they burrow into the ground, and for a full year, they eat the roots under the ground, and they live underground their whole life. They shed their skin as they grow, so now I imagine they're like a grub, like a, you know, a fat worm maybe, and they have to shed their skin as they grow. And then once it's time, and then they have this internal clock, they have this instinct somehow to know when to come out of the ground, and they do it all together. They kind of make this appearance, and then they climb somewhere in a tree or a shrub, and they shed their final skin, and voila, they're not a worm anymore. They're not a nymph, they're not a grub. Now they're a cicada. They got wings. And what happens when they get out of the ground is they start singing. Now, I didn't realize this till I looked it up, but only the males sing. Yeah, only the males sing. And, you know, it is that they're trying to attract the female so that they can ensure that the species continues. I was thinking it must be like Friday night at the karaoke bar and somebody's hoping to, well, anyhow. So I love that story, but where it gets really, really juicy is that there are types of cicadas that stay in the ground for how long? 17 years. So there are oh my goodness, look what the cat just drug in. Now, Fred, be nice to me later, okay? They voted. They wanted that. It's out of my hands. I got to please the bigger group. Okay, so that ruined me. I love you, honey. So there are cicadas that only come out every 17 years. They spend 17 years in the dark, shedding a lot of skin as they're growing. And this happens most commonly in the northeastern part of the country. And so has anybody lived in an area where the cicadas came out and had that experience? And see, lots of you have. Wow. And I understand, I've seen photos of it. It's like they overtake the territory. And you know why that is? It's because in an acre of land, there can be as many as 1.5 million cicadas. Now, every female cicada will lay about 600 eggs. So that's a lot of potential. And there's some science where they talk, they have these scientific terms where it's a satiating burst of, so it's a lot of food. When they first come out of the ground, that then the birds and the animals that eat them just really fill up with, have a hearty meal. They have a hearty meal when the cicadas are coming. But I also learned that there are 155 different types of cicadas, and only 5 types are the kind that stay in the ground for 17 years. And there are 2 different time lengths to be in the ground. One is 13 years and the other is 17 years, and they call it prime numbered life cycles, which I thought was kind of clever. And by the way, each of the 155 types of cicadas have a different song. So as I played with it on the internet, you could do this too. It was really fun. I found a site that you could scroll through, and it had like 30 or 40 different, it had a picture of the cicada, and then you could click on it, and you could and it would demonstrate the sound, what they sound like when they're singing. So, you know, it's an age-old story. The males come out, and they sing to attract the females so that there can be that reproduction thing that happens. It takes not too long for the eggs to hatch, but they then spend 6 to 8 weeks or 6 to 10 weeks still in the tree. Mom and dad croak. They're done. Their work is done. They don't need to stick around to take care of the youngins. And then the little nymphs fall off the branches after about 6 weeks, and they burrow their way down, and they do their thing. When that emergence happens with the cicadas that only come out every 17 years, they come out in what science calls a developmental synchronization. So this intrigues me. We had desert tortoises in our backyard that kept multiplying, and it absolutely intrigues me the instincts they have for digging the hole, for laying the eggs, for covering the hole. We watched one of our female tortoises literally bring the grass back so you couldn't tell where she laid the eggs. Because when you have them domesticated, you're supposed to try and harvest the eggs and get them in an aquarium because they have a more likely, a higher likelihood of survival if they aren't birthed in the wild. Because in the wild, they come up and then birds could eat them and other things. There's this amazing way that we can witness the law of growth all around us. Now, Emerson, Ralph Waldo Emerson, who is a favorite of many of ours, Ernest Holmes loved studying Emerson very much, Emerson said that we learn everything we need to know. We can learn everything we need to know by observing nature. In fact, he said that we study the visible to recognize the invisible. So we look at the physical world, everything in form, and if we look at the life patterns that are given to us by all of the rest of life, there are just little lessons for us everywhere, even in the life of the cicada, I would say. In fact, I told you all that, so I can now tell you this. It is a way, Emerson would say, that we can study the mystery. And you know, as human beings, when we confront things that we don't understand well, we look to make sense of things. So this is a great way for us to study that. And I was thinking as I looked at that idea that the cicada spends its life in the dark, sort of underground, that there is a similarity to that in our own living, in the way that we are sort of youthful and young in our life, and that as adults, we encounter experiences that grow us so that we are sort of intuitively drawn toward the light. So the more that we age in our adult lives, the stronger that spiritual pull can feel. You know, we can really have a longing that maybe we didn't feel as younger people. Some young people do. There's no question. Some people come to the planet already with some sort of intuitive, deep connection to the spiritual realm and all that greater element of life. And I also think that another way we're similar is that the experiences of life cause us to shed our skin. As we grow through the things that we encounter, we have to let go of that old way we have been sort of limited in our understanding of life, and it brings us to a fuller experience of or an opportunity to broaden then. So I always say consciousness is cumulative, and so through our lessons, as we pay attention to our life experiences, we sort of raise our consciousness to a higher understanding of what life is all about. And I promise you, we do have an instinct for it. Ernest Holmes said, "We must learn to trust in the law of growth." That's where I got the title of the message this morning. We must learn to trust in the law of growth. There is a law of evolution or unfoldment in nature which does this in a logical sequence. That's what we can see. I mean, on one hand, I don't see much logic in something staying in the ground 17 years, coming out, and I mean, I don't understand it, but it is the natural pattern for that particular species, just in the same way that we have natural patterns for our own life. So we, humanity, not just us sitting in this room, but all of humanity, have an instinct that I believe has surfaced right now in this time that we are living in. It is surfacing, and it is an instinct for emergence. We are being called to rise to a higher perspective and to have new ideas. So when we're looking at what that means in terms of shifts in our consciousness, we have to then define what consciousness is. So we're talking about sort of our mind, and our mind is not our brain. It's so much more than that. We're talking about what we do, sort of like you're creating the story of your own life, and you put all your experiences together, and then that's your view of life. That's how you see what makes sense to you in the way it relates to what you've been through. So there is something going on now that is inviting us to sort of expand and enlarge what we're looking at. And I believe that's because we're living in progressive times. And when I say that we are living in progressive times, I am not talking about liberalism and conservatism. it's so interesting to me. I'm not talking politics today. I want you to hear, because I think when we think that's what's going on, it limits what we're able to hear. I want you to be able to take this home in a much bigger package today. Progressive times means that we are living in a time where advancements in all kinds of ways are very vital to the improvement of the human condition. Now that's what church is for. That's what this center is sitting here for. We say that our product is a changed human life. I just said that last week when we looked at our own center. So how are we doing that? How are we not blocking that advancement of improvement of the human condition? And as I look around, you know, I think, gosh, are your kids electronically connected, plugged in? Are you boys plugged in electronically? Are you plugged in right now?
No.
I wouldn't hate that. I'm just happy you're here, you know. I love having you here. What we know is that there are all kinds of things going on in the world that are not bad. Yes, we can be critical of the way kids are plugged in these days, but we also can see that we are living in a time where science and technology have so advanced, where there are medical advances. I had lunch with the Moores. John and Dorothy send their love. I had lunch with the Moores last week, and people were walking in the dining room, and Dorothy would lean over and go, "She's 103. He's 97. You know, we're living longer, folks, and we're looking at how to improve the quality of our life as we age. So there's medical advances, but there are also things happening in the spiritual realm. You know, we know this. We can't be blind to this. But church attendance is dropping. The numbers are dropping of who attends church. And yet, spirituality is kind of booming. So people are looking for a way to have spirituality in their life. And I think what they're really looking for, if we're going to talk relevance, is they're looking for the ways for the experience of diversity and inclusivity. So it's no longer comfortable for many people to have a church that believes they have the only truth there is. And isn't that something we can rejoice over? Yes. Yes, we can find our way, and then we can also allow people to find their way, whether it's at a temple or a cathedral or a mosque, and where they can be spiritually fed, and we can practice, we can learn. I think we're learning how to honor all paths. I don't think we have it all figured out, and I think that what we're really talking about is the law of growth. The world is changing, but let us not lose sight of the personal way our lives are changing also. Sometimes I think about all the chaos in the world and how many people have been troubled by chaos in the world, and then we lose sight of the fact that there are people who cried themselves to sleep last night. There are people who are facing scary circumstances. There are people in this room who cried themselves to sleep last night. You know, just looking at the numbers of people here, we have had all kinds of experiences yesterday. It felt to me like all that was going on in the world was our beautiful parking lot sale. But we know that's not true. We know there's a lot more going on, and that we take a period of time in our life and we focus on a project. You know, we're creative beings. We cannot not be creative. So we learn to trust the law of growth, and then we find out how to continue to expand. If consciousness is cumulative, how do we accumulate more? Well, I say that the best way to do that, and this might be your takeaway this morning, is to figure out what you do stand for. Now, the current events this has been such a fun week as I processed all this material and what I was going to say when my husband came in late and all that. But I was thinking that the one gift out of the really chaotic times we've seen in the last year or so, the one gift is that I think we all are a lot clearer about what we will not stand for. And so even in this room as I speak, we have liberals and conservatives. I promise you, some of you might be stunned, but it's true. You know, we're a beautiful, diverse crowd. It's what we aim to be, and we're successful at that. And what I know is that you got to look at what you don't like in order to know what you do like. You got to know what you don't want so that you can point yourself in the direction of what you do want. Our founder, Ernest Holmes, was very specific in saying we must look at the discordance in our life. Because as we look at what's not working, we can then hone in even more personally as to what we desire to have instead of this, whatever this is. And so we do that for our own life, and we're working the law of growth as we do that, because when I look over here and I go, that is not acceptable in my life, when I read the current events, so what I know is that majority of the people here have in some way, no matter what you believe, no matter what you want, everyone here, or most everyone, let's say, has gotten to the point where they have, you know, slammed the foot down and went, enough already. I'm not going to read Facebook for a while. I don't want all that negativity. Or, wow, I really disagree with what's going on over there. What happens when you disagree with what's going on over there? If that is all you look at, how are you going to feel? Not so good if you don't like it, right? But if I look over there and I go, that is not okay, what else is there to look at? What else would I desire? Then we put, I think this is what that scripture means in the Bible where it says, get behind me, Satan. Get behind me. I put it behind me so that I can clear the way to now move in a positive direction that will be fruitful and it will be a path that I desire to experience in my own living. And so Holmes says that that is the way we neutralize a negative situation. Now, that is not saying we close our eyes. Remember, the first thing you have to do is to look at the discordance and see it. So what are you for? What are you for? What do you know you're here for? I looked at my own life and I said, you know what? I know, and I've known this almost my whole life, I am for people. I believe in people. I have been gifted. Thank God I wouldn't be able to do this job if I didn't have this. But I have been gifted with the ability to see the best in people. Not all the time. Sometimes they disappoint me. But I have been gifted to recover quickly from my disappointment and see that there's always more going on than what meets that little private eye, that little private view. So I know I'm for people. I know I'm for education. I know I'm for goodness. I know I stand for love. I know I stand for God, for spirit, for knowing that there is a power in this universe that's greater than I am. And I know all those things matter to me. I value, and if you know me, you know this, I value connection and I value relationships. But before I could know that, I had to recognize what I didn't stand for, you know? So I know that I do not stand for ignorance. Ernest Holmes says that your ignorance to the working of the law does not excuse you from the consequences of it. So I'm all for educating people in all kinds of ways. I do not support evil or mean-spiritedness or bullying. Or just any kinds of unkindness or abuse, right? So if I know that, I now can be clearer about what I do believe in. So what do you stand for? You know, that's what we need to really take away. And don't be afraid to look at the things that trigger you, because that can be the very thing that will point you in the right direction. This has to be bigger than politics. This has to be bigger than ethnicity or gender or even religion, because we're talking about allness. We're talking about wholeness. We're talking about life, and life is about growth. So I work very hard. I don't know that I'm successful all the time, but I work very hard at not telling you what to believe. I know what I believe, and I will share experiences from that. But my goal is to tell you how to believe, how to listen to your heart, how to create a space in the stillness of a day to sort of create an awareness of the divine imagination. It's God's imagination that is that which guides us and directs us. Think about that. It's the divine imagination. If I think of it that way, it's a whole different way than thinking about it as the power of the Almighty. It gives me room to be creative in the way that I apply it in my own life. So I can teach you principle that will help you through tough times. I can offer you space to come together, to study, to ponder, to have conversations together. I can encourage you to see the sacred wherever you look, to come face to face with God in your relationships. But you, each of us as an individual, gets to determine that path for ourselves. You get to choose how you encounter the law of growth. Now, Max Eastman is, he's not living anymore. He lived at the same time period that Ernest Holmes did. So he was born in about 1885, I believe. He died in 1969. And he was an author and a poet and a philosopher and had his hands in a lot of things. And he said this: after the axiom that happiness is the chief end of man, in other words, we have the right to pursue happiness, each and every one of us, and that seems to be kind of a universal idea. After that axiom that we have that right to happiness, the next truth of natural ethics is that the chief way to be happy is to grow. See, when we're unhappy, we have hit a block. We are standing in, whenever we are unhappy, we can look and see, okay, so what's going on right now? And we have hit a block, and we're standing there either resisting growth or not able to see that it's an invitation for us to grow and stretch a little bit. And it happens. And I think that you know, we're unhappy when we're stagnant. We know nobody likes to be bored. But we are unhappy even when we don't realize that unhappiness happens because we have come to the very edge of our growth. That's why we call it the growing edge, right? The leading edge. This is now that place where I have to go into action, like the cicada digging out of the dirt, you know? So there's an instinct that might be screaming, retreat, go back. But the bigger part of us knows that if we go back, we aren't going to have that happiness we desire. And so we have to step over it. We have to sometimes leap over it. But it's just an invitation for our growth. Now, many of you know I dabbled in midwifery, and I'm an old childbirth educator, and so I see the entire spiritual path as a birth process. My personal mission statement is I midwife souls and communities into their wholeness. So I relate everything to the process of birth because everything in life is about birth. Every end is the beginning of something else. So we're always birthing or rebirthing ourselves as we continue to move and grow. But I want to tell you something sort of interesting I thought about it. I don't know that many of you will relate to this in the way it speaks to me. But when I was a childbirth educator, I would teach couples that there are three stages to birth. So you're pregnant, but then that pregnancy ends when you go into labor. You are beginning the process of birthing. Now, Pearl S. Buck had the best statement on birth there is. All birth, not just reproducing, birth, not humans, not animals, but all birth, all of our new experiences are painful and messy. And so if you start on that premise, you can't go wrong. So you got these three stages of birth, and here's where it got really interesting when I was thinking about it while I was writing this. So the first stage is labor, all the labor. But then there's a point at the end of labor where you move into that second stage that is expulsion, pushing that baby out. Now, whether we are helping with that process or not, there is something, an instinct in the body that knows how to do that. Don't worry, Kathy, I won't go too far. And then, so expulsion, it takes 75 pounds of pressure from the uterus alone to start expelling that baby. But it needs another 75 pounds of pressure, hopefully from the mom. And when you see the medical intervention, it's because, well, never mind. This happened on class on Wednesday night. Don't get me started. I just think that when it's left alone to do what it needs to do, it goes better. But... right, I know. You see, amen. I heard a couple of women who know this to be true. So the contractions are completely different quality. This is just like life. We can labor over a project, but when it's time to give it birth and let it set it free, you know, artists know this, writers know this, any project you've ever worked on, when it's time to let it free, you darn well better let it free. You've got to set it free. And then... after the baby is born, it's not over. The third stage of labor still has to happen. It's the birth of the afterbirth. It's the expulsion of the placenta. So here's something now that has been living in the womb, alive, feeding a baby, and now it has to get out of there. In fact, in the medical world, they are very attentive to that. We're all the midwives. You know this to be true, right? Right? We look at it very carefully to make sure none of it hasn't torn apart, because that stuff still kills women, right? So it's simple, it's natural, but that's a part of the process. That third step of giving birth is getting rid of that which is no longer needed. Doesn't serve a function anymore. If we look at nature, all the answers are there. There is a time where we will have an instinct to push. Will you follow that lead? There is a time where we are called to let go. A full stage of birth is letting go. Learn to trust the law of growth. Watch the natural cycles. The trees flourish in the spring, and then somehow, miraculously, they know when to let go. Easter is coming. Oh, God. just because it's so quick, I can't. Do you know that it's Ash Wednesday this week? So party big, right? That's Mardi Gras. Wednesday night, party big, because the suffering starts after Ash Wednesday. You got to give something up. But we work toward Easter, and then what happens? Do you know what the celebration of Easter is? I don't care what religion you are or aren't or never have been. It is the celebration of the risen Christ. No more suffering. It's over. It's the resurrection, and that is a natural part of how life goes. So whether it is a religious acknowledgement or even the earth-based spirituality has ritual and ceremony for the changing of the seasons, the story is the same. It is about the continuity of life. Every seeming ending is followed by a new beginning. Things shift and change. Things fall away. People move or leave us. Relationships end. Finances shift and change and are recreated. Our bodies change and, well, aren't what they used to be. But there's always new. That's what the story of the resurrection is about. It is about the old falling away so that a new orientation can begin. We orient ourselves in a new way to life, a new way of being. And we have to let go. If we don't let go of our stuff, now think of that in your mind, you're hanging on to your stuff. If you don't let go, your hands, your productivity will be less. because you're hanging on, you're doing other things. The patterns of life have a natural gravitational pull, if you will. It's like a magnetic field. And we can play with that or we can resist that. But know this, all thought is creative. In fact, I would go so far as to say, all thought is causative. So what are you thinking? You know, there are so many scriptural passages in the new thought ideas that are about the way we think. As a man thinketh, as you sow, think of the thoughts that you're sowing. As you sow, so shall you reap. The measure you give in thought will be measured back to you. See what happens when we put thought in there, when we start understanding it that way? Be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And of course, according to your beliefs, it is done unto you. My friends, we are immersed in creative potential. In fact, we are always creating, promoting, or allowing all the conditions of our life. We are always creating, promoting, or allowing all the conditions and situations that we experience in our life. So what will you stand for? How will you create newness in your life? Where can you let go? And I wanted to end this morning with a beautiful, very intriguing quotation from George Eliot. And what is sort of fun about the quotes like this is that George Eliot was, of course, Mary Ann Evans, a woman who had a pen name so that she would be more have more credibility in what she wrote, common in that day. And she said this, "Our consciousness rarely registers the beginning of growth within us any more than we can acknowledge it, the growth outside of us. There have been many circulations of the sap before we detect even the smallest sign of the bud. Trust this process of growth." Let's take a moment to anchor these seed ideas. So just take a breath. And as we begin to think of all the words that have been spoken this morning, we know that there is a special gem in all of it, just for ourselves. And so I open myself to recognize the power and the presence of God right here in this room. I know that spirit itself, that eternal call to growth, is here as an infinite intelligence, and we do indeed witness it in the universe, in so many demonstrations in nature of that grand insistence on life. I feel the love of God right here in this sanctuary. And I know it is that same stirring at the center of my own being. Just as we have been called together this morning to sit in this room, to open ourselves to that expansion of consciousness, to be inspired by whatever it is that we have needed, that we have yearned for, that divine illumination that shows us a new way. We are enlightened so that we know which foot to put in front of the next foot as we walk through this life. And as we sense our oneness with God, as we know there is only one mind, it is the mind of God, and that mind is our mind now. sense that pure connection. The way that intelligence permeates every cell of our being, every organ, every function of this beautiful body. And so there is a movement that has no constriction. There is a circulation of all the good things in life within the body and within our relationships and in our finances. Because we are happy when things move. We are healthy and vibrant and alive. So we take this morning to set aside our fear, to open ourselves, to gain that awareness of knowing who our source is. And to remember that the givingness of God, the grace of God is ever pouring, streaming into our lives. And at that recognition, we just open ourselves even now to be vessels. We are containers to receive the good. We know which way to face so that we can align to a greater truth, so that we can stand in the beauty of the cumulative effect of consciousness. So just as we have been immersed today in that intellectual experience, we've had moments we've shared of laughter and of joy, of aha, of expansion. Realize these are blessings, not only to ourselves, but gifts to the world, to this planet. So I rejoice in recognizing these divine patterns, the truth of life, the beauty of the way all things fit together all the time, and that there is safety in change because it is the law of so I say thank you, God. Thank you, life. Thank you, infinite spirit, for all of these truths, for the way we are awake yet again and aware. And I release this time and these words into that divine law that always responds affirmatively. And together we say,